Hello and welcome to another episode of the Customer Experience Podcast with your host, Emma Dark. Terminator, Blade Runner, Ex Machina, iRobot. While Emma's chat today with Mark Billingham of The Very Group isn't quite as dramatic as some of those blockbusters, the topic of AI has been around for a long time and is super topical. Mark gives us some insight into his learnings, practical tips, and overwhelming positive results of building a bot to handle a huge amount of customer queries each month, 250,000 to be exact. They dive into what capability you need sitting behind the bot, how they got customers involved using their UX lab, which I assume is as cool as it sounds, the opportunities it creates for your internal team, and why the job is never done even after you've built it. If you're looking to build an AI chatbot in your organization, here is a 45-minute practical guide from someone who has done just that. So please enjoy the show and don't forget to subscribe to the podcast.
Mark, welcome to the Customer Experience Podcast. Really excited to have you as my guest today. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Emma. Yeah.
The topic for today is centered around AI chatbots. And I was inspired by this topic, having seen a recent post that you put onto LinkedIn. And it really grabbed my attention. So there's a couple of kind of headlines from that post that I wanted to share with the listener. So 250,000 contacts handled a month at The Very Group. And The Very Assistant is now the biggest customer service channel. So that's really freeing up those advisors to deal with the more complex and emotive questions from customers. And then it went on to say that over the last year, contacts have reduced by 23% and then nearly 50% over 2 years. So, you know, big contact reduction there for savings and also better experiences for customers. And the biggest wow moment for me, which absolutely was the reason why I reached out to you, Mark, was the bot, the AI bot, is getting 4 out of 5 stars from the customer in terms of ease of use. So, you know, phenomenal results there. I've led customer operations teams for over 20 years, and I know none of those statistics are easy to achieve. So I thought it'd be really good for the listeners today to just kind of bring to life how you've achieved that, really, and help, you know, those listening understand how to digitalize their customer service channel successfully. So take me back to the beginning. I guess the first thing I want to ask you is, what led you to kind of kick off that change project, which was around, you know, creating this customer service channel using AI technology?
Yeah, good question. I think, listen, similar to you, Emma, my career spanned kind of 15, 20 years in customer care operations. I've led very manual operations and I've led slightly more digital operations. And I first got into kind of playing about with navigating chatbots in my last role at Vodafone. We rolled out Toby, which was AI-led natural language bot. And it's fair to say I probably made every mistake under the sun doing that, to be fair, and learned an awful lot about how not to roll out a bot. And that's often the best learning to how to do something successfully. So when I got here to The Very Group, they already had a small bot. It was tucked away in the app, and it was really just an FAQ. It wasn't natural language. It wasn't, had no major AI built into it. But actually, coming into this organization and the type of work that we do, and obviously supporting our customers, whether that's through our retail side or our financial services arm, it was primed for something on the website that helped our customers. Now, thankfully, we'd started some of the design work already. And I think in any of these transitions, it's really important that, and this was one of the things I learned the hard way, that you understand every single reason why a customer contacts you. And I know you'll know this from your years of experiences. You know, I simplistically came into this business thinking it's a retail business. People buy stuff, people return stuff, people pay for stuff. How many reasons to contact us can there be? And thinking there's probably 5 or 6 out. Over-exaggerating there. There was 10,000 different reasons why our customers contacted us. And we did that piece of work up front to be really sure and really clear on what are all the reasons why a customer contacts us and what's the best way to service those customers, not for us as a business, but for them in terms of getting things solved quickly, simply, and easily you know, what's the best channels we've got? And we've got some great service, self-service channels. And I was lucky when I came in that we've got some great self-service channels. So really we put the AI there to learn, what do our customers want? What types of questions are they asking? And how's the best way we can service them? And really our bot, you know, the very assistant acts as a concierge service, really. It will direct you through self-service within the bot itself if we've got great self-service. If it's not, it'll hand you to the right team and the right department straight away to make sure you get your query resolved. It's certainly not there, and we haven't put this bot in there to stop people speaking to our people. And I guess that's a common mistake that often happens with bots and upsets customers, is we want to make an easy and really clear way to navigate to the best channel for you as a customer and point you in the right direction. So, you know, it's the bot's all built in-house using our own technology, but it's backed by IBM Watson, and that's the brain that sits in the background there, that's constantly learning, constantly evolving, telling us what's working and what's not working so that we can keep it updated. And, you know, that growth from kind of a few thousand queries a week to, you know, nearly 250,000 a month has happened over a 9 to 12 month period as we've grown the bot out.
10,000 reasons for contacting. That could go in the Guinness Book of Records,
I think. Yeah. We do have the complication of being, not the complication, it's a great thing to be, but obviously we're a retail business and a financial services business, as you know. So, you know, it's not, we've got two businesses almost, we're operating at the same time, as well as being a digital only organization. So we don't have that footfall in shops. We don't have those people asking questions. So really, you know, the only way to contact us is via the web or via phone. So, you know, we do get all sorts of weird and wonderful queries, but understanding them up front has helped us to direct the customers in the right way. We're still building on it. It's not perfect. We've still got a long way to go. You know, training a bot is like training a person. And, you know, it only happens over time. A bit similar to, I guess, how voice recognition has evolved over the years as well. We all know when it started out, it wasn't great. It never understood anything. You know, now the likes of Alexa, Google Home, you know, they're more accurate than human beings now. And I think bots are on that same journey.
Fascinating. When you started, Mark, you know, obviously you had real good insight as to, you know, why you went on the journey and why you chose AI as a channel. But what was the success criteria? So what was your intention, you know, when you started? What did good look like in terms of from your perspective around that change program? What did you set out to achieve?
Well, I guess we touched on it earlier. Based on previous mistakes, the first thing was not to upset our customers. You know, not to put something in front of them that could do one thing but couldn't do another 100 things. And really, we didn't launch our bot until we were confident it had a decent level of capacity to deal with customers' queries. And that might simply be, I don't know the answer, I'll pass you to somebody who does know. And I think that's why we started with that question of ease, because what we wanted to create is something that's really simple to navigate, something that gets you to the right place first time and doesn't create these loops or barriers that often digital self-service and AI can. As I say, it's not perfect. There's still areas we're working on, and every day we're working on improving the bot, and there's a squad of people behind it. But really our ambition was to put something on the web that gave customers the answers they needed quickly and got them to the right place straight away. Now, obviously that has a benefit, you know, for us commercially and as a business, if we can direct people to self-serve where they don't need to contact the contact center. Also as a benefit for the customer, if they can resolve it easy themselves and not have to, you know, wait on the line for a phone or a web chat to somebody. So we started with ease and simplicity. They're the two words that I like to hammer home, I guess, when it comes to any digital transformation and any digital platform, is make it easy, make it simple, and make sure you don't, you know, make it more difficult than the customer needs through that process. The same logic we've probably used in IVRs for many years, which, you know, First Direct are probably the kings of in terms of just don't have one there in the first place. Ideally, you know, you want to make everything as simple, can be done within one or two steps. And that was the journey that we set out on.
You talked about squads that sit behind that. So What are the capabilities that, you know, sat behind that, you know, that kind of AI technology? What kind of capabilities have you got in-house, or had to kind of, you know, kind of outsource really to allow you to get that project off the ground and to be successful as it is today?
Yeah, we've been quite lucky really, given we're a digital organisation. You know, we've used our own web development team to create the look, the feel. We've used our own in-house teams from a technical development perspective. But obviously we've used the IBM Watson technology in the background to act as that natural language brain. And we've built it in a way where you can plug those two things together or you can separate those things over time. But all the knowledge in terms of the brain of the bot comes from the customer care team, because it's intrinsically linked to our customers, what they're saying every day, what they're doing. And we use a text analytics, we use speech analytics to understand all of those intents, all of those reasons why a customer may contact us. But there's one product owner who's come from customer care, knows customer care inside out. There's effectively the pseudo person behind the bot, really, the one that's training it on a daily basis, the one that's making sure that it's done in customer language, the one that's making sure it's simple for customers and we get to first contact resolution, is all product owned by somebody who's really knows customer care inside out rather than somebody technical, to make sure that it looks, feels and acts as a person would.
And do you get customers involved in any of that? Do you bring them in to get involved in any of the testing, any of the kind of refining and continuous improvement?
We do, Emma, yeah. We have a brilliant UX lab, you may have been. We have a brilliant UX lab at Skyways House, which pre-COVID, you know, every 3 months we'd get a group of customers come through, test the bot, tell us what they think, tell us what type of stuff works and doesn't work for them. And it's been a really interesting journey, really. We've been doing it virtually during the pandemic and trying to keep that going. But there's nothing quite like having someone there face-to-face doing it. I'd say that's one bit that's probably suffered a little bit during the pandemic, to be fair, albeit we're still learning tons from what we're doing virtually. But it's quite interesting as people get to learn about, you know, lots of our customers. You think we've got two key brands, you know, in the UK. We've got Littlewoods, we've got Very, and then we've got Littlewoods Island as well. So we've got three different brands that, you know, customers and demographics within those businesses are slightly different. And actually, we've tested it in different scenarios. It's only on Very at the minute, but we are, you know, planning next year to roll it out on Littlewoods and Littlewoods Island. So we've been testing it on different groups of customers, and you get different reactions, to be fair. You get you know, a group of people who are really comfortable with technology and you know, would go to the bot first for anything and then get quite upset if the bot can't do it, and they get handed off into a channel. There's definitely a preference for web chat above voice off the back of the bot, because people have engaged in that digital channel and want to stay within that digital channel. And then you get a group of people who would rather phone for everything, and you get that in every organisation. There's certain people who just need that reassurance and want to contact you for stuff. But actually, as we've got them in the lab and we've got them using the bot, you know, the overarching theme has been, well, I wouldn't have used this, but now I've used it, it's really simple, and actually I'll use it moving forward. So I think we need to find that tipping point, like businesses have done in the past, of how do you move people from one channel to another channel? And how do you get people interacting with it so that they understand it and they like it and they're comfortable with it? We stand here today with about 40% of our customers using the bot. So we've still got a big pool of people who don't use the bot yet to grow that number. But actually, the overwhelming feedback has been, it's simple, it's easy to use. And that's what we've been kind of really leaning towards. But they give us some great, every time we go through it, they give us some great insight of, that could work better, this doesn't quite work for me. And we use those UX labs on a regular basis and get probably our best insight from them.
Having a UX lab, that's pretty snazzy, I guess. Is that how much of an investment is that for an organization? For those that haven't got one, haven't conceived even that idea yet, you know, is it a big commitment for an organization to have, and an investment to have?
Not at all. All you need is two rooms and some customers, really, to be fair. I mean, we've, in typical, digital style, we've set ours up so that we can watch the interactions of the customers in the other room and we can see what they're doing on the devices. I mean, but all of that isn't really expensive technology. I mean, really, what you just want is customers face-to-face using the technology and giving you feedback. And you can do that, you know, with a waiting room and effectively another room. So you don't have to make it Big Brother like, you don't have to make it MI5 like. You can, you know, my advice is get customers in, talk to customers, get their feedback, the good, the bad, the ugly, and I guess use that and listen to that, because particularly in our business and most businesses are the same. You've got different cohorts of customers who act very differently. And the main important thing is you get people from cross sections of those groups to try it so that you understand how it works. And it may not work for everybody. You know, we've still got a group, particularly in Littlewoods, of customers who would like to ring us for everything. Now we don't, you know, during the pandemic, we actually stopped for the final time taking orders over the phone. So 100% of everything we do now is digital here. And, you know, that last cohort of customers were the last to go through that channel shift. They'll probably be the last cohort of customers to go through the next channel shift to the bot. So I think it's important you keep pace with each group of customers and ensure that, you know, you're building things for them further down the line. And you'll never get it perfect for everybody. But you, this is my whole point around, you don't just shut channels off. You know, it's about how you help customers and direct them to the right person. You know, I certainly don't want people who feel distressed or need help not get being able to speak to people. That's not that, you know, that's the worst way of doing customer service in my view. But equally, providing great tools and great, you know, assets that they can use and they're happy to use is a great way to move your strategy forward.
And you set out in terms of success to achieve ease and simplicity, and you've clearly achieved that with your 4 out of 5 star rating for ease of use. You've brought to life some of the attributes, but are there any other key intentional actions you took or activities that, you know, you delivered within that change project that allowed you to realise that success?
That process we went through to identify the key reasons for why customers contact us was important for a number of reasons. One, it allowed us to understand all the different things we needed to build into the bot. But secondly, it allowed us to understand the quantum of each of those types of queries. So when we started the project, what we ensured we did is, you know, it's the same with most customer service organizations. 80% of your queries come from 20% of the questions, if that makes sense. So we made sure we built the most important and the most asked questions up front. The other thing that we made sure happens within the AI is it learns really fast. So we'll offer some guidance at the start of the bot to customers on our most frequently asked questions. So keeping it relevant, keeping it current with the themes was really important in ensuring that, you know, it was liked straight away, it was useful straight away. You then get the buy-in from the customers and then they continue to use it for more things. So, you know, it's a bit like your banking app to an extent, and we're nowhere near where some of the banks are with some of their stuff. Although I haven't seen many good AI built into banking apps yet, just great, simple self-service. And I guess you've got to have that good self-service up front and you've got to know how to fix customers' queries before you even start on a bot journey. You know, I'd say the banks now are absolutely ripe for building this kind of AI on top of, because they have better self-service than most of us. And you can find it quite hard to navigate around the site sometimes. So the other thing we did in the design of the bot is looked at, you know, how easy is it to navigate around the site to find these things versus find them in the bot? Because what I didn't want to drag away from is there's really easy and simple to use self-service there that we're dragging them away from a channel that works and back into, you know, this isn't about creating a new channel for the sake of it. So we did a lot of work up front to identify how can the bot be useful? Where does it just need a little bit of guidance to get people to the right place versus where does it need a full flow of a conversation? And, you know, as you get into complaints and you get into the more emotive types of subjects, we make sure we put the right wraparound in there. We put the right language in there for customers as well. And that's really important in the bot. I think some bots can be a little bit too robotic and, you know, Big Brother says, or, you know, a bit scary in some sort of ways. I remember in a previous business having an internal facing bot for our HR systems. And it was perhaps the scariest thing that I've ever done. It was always nicer to ring the central HR department versus those that are really jokey and take, you know, almost take the mickey in the wrong scenario. So the other thing we work really hard on in that upfront design is the language of it, making sure it fits the question. You know, if somebody says, I'd like to complain, the first thing you do always do is apologize, say sorry, and get them to the right person straight away. Not capturing complaints in the bot, because if I want to complain to an organization, I want to speak to a human being, I want to talk them through my, you know, why I want to complain, what's happened, and get some reassurance that I want a resolution to it. So, you know, complaints, financial difficulties, all that is about the right language and getting people into the right, you know, assisted contact versus I want to make a payment or where's my order. Those things we can wrap a nice, you know, almost fun self-service journey around for our customers. So we spent a lot of time thinking about the type of question and how we designed the bot at the start.
Feels like, you know, in the design phase, certainly you've used humans, whether that's customers or your customer care team, you know, or your product owner, and you've obviously got the internal tech guys and girls working on that as well. But you've used the human element in the design phase, which has allowed that empathy to come through and allowed that ease of use to come through. So, you know, you can really tell the humanized element of it is still really important, because, you know, you talked about there's still a way to go from your perspective in terms of how much more the bot can do. So, you know, what kind of continuous improvement activities have you got underway? Because you said 40% are in through the AI bot. You know, what's your target and what kind of other things can you do to get you to that target, really? When will you be satisfied?
Yes, I think the two core bits in any AI bot build for me, the first is how do you get people using it? And in that, as I said, 40% of customers use it. Our target is to have 70% by the end of next financial year, which is next summer for us. We're just finishing 1 year in into another. To do that, what we've got to do is expose the bot to more people. And at the moment, it's only available in logged in journeys for our customers. So what we'll be doing in kind of Q1 this year is putting it on the outside of our site and allowing customers to log in where they need to be secure, but allow the bot to answer questions on the outside of our site. Because if you think about it, questions might be, how do I log in? I can't log in, as an example. You know, you can't do that if you're not logged in. So, you know, we're missing the opportunity for the bot to help customers in different places. So first and foremost, we'll be putting it into more places to make sure that people can use it. Secondly, we'll be making sure our SEO works for us and we're pointing people to the bot wherever possible, rather than pointing them to different parts of the site. The second bit of making the bot successful is making sure it can answer as many queries as possible. Now, at the minute, 75% of people who use our bot, as you said at the start, don't need to ring our contact center. So the bot is successfully answering that for them. But 25% are having to ring the contact center off the back of it, or, you know, chat with us. So we focus really heavily on those 25% of customers. Why can't they, you know, why can't the bot do it? Is the bot suitable for doing it? Or is it something that we would, you know, recommend you speak to one of our highly trained colleagues to do? And we're going through that process systematically of that other 25% and learning how much. The bot will never, in my eyes, do 100% of stuff for customers. And I'm really comfortable with that because, as we said earlier, there's certain types of transactions where it's just more reassuring. It's better for us as a business. It's better for the customer to have a conversation, whether written or you know, over the telephone with the customers. But it's about, as you said at the start, freeing up those people to have those more, you know, emotional, complex conversations and problem solve. You know, our core stat in the call center that we use and we will always use is first contact resolution, because we want to resolve things first time for customers. Mm-hmm. And freeing up that space by taking the more simple transactions out allows us to do more training, you know, allow more time on the phone for our people and really drive a culture of first time fix in the contact center. So it's those two balances working together. But we're at 75% at the minute. I would say we can get to 85 as a minimum. 90% of stuff answered through the bot. I think there's about 10% that we probably couldn't, that we couldn't do, and I wouldn't want to do, being honest, Emma.
Yeah, and that makes sense because there'll always be, you know, a need to break out and speak to someone and a person. And, you know, it's great to hear that whilst you're on that digital journey, you know, there's still the customer is still at the heart, really, in terms of there will be a time and a place and you don't make it difficult for them. And in fact, it feels like the design work that you're putting in is thinking ahead for the customer, involving the customer. And that's just going to, you know, it equals success for you and the customer in terms of, you know, continuing to want to shop with the very group as well. So challenges. So far, we've talked a lot about the success, you know, in terms of how you've structured things, using customers, the capabilities internally, just the thought process that's gone into this. But what were the things that kind of came along the way, the key challenges that you faced, and how did you overcome that?
Yeah, I think there's stuff that's hygiene and there's stuff that's kind of more kind of cultural. I think, you know, from a hygiene factors perspective, we're a digital business. We're constantly updating our website. So finding the right resource, finding the right prioritization with the business to get it built and build it in the right way is always going to be a struggle in any business. Now, thankfully, you know, we've got a really kind of mature way of doing change within the very group, and change is actually devolved into the different areas of the business. So I have the autonomy and own the technical part of customer care. You know, the retail team have their own technical team, the logistics team, as an example, have their own. Now, obviously, all that comes together in our website. So there's a level of prioritization that's always needed. But actually, we've empowered each part of the business to have their own squads and deliver change, which has been a fantastic step forward for us as a business. The other things is just making sure that language is absolutely spot on with the bot. It's a full-time job for two people to man that bot. And I think you've got to build the right squad from a knowledge management perspective behind AI. It's effectively a new type of channel. It's a new contact center in a way. It's just an automated one, but it's still effectively a concierge or whatever you want to call it. It's got to be managed and managed, and the language got to be perfect. So you need somebody who can understand what our customers need, understand how to write content, and understand how to, you know, process map the flows through at the same time. It's quite a difficult job. I think culturally, my always head goes back to the fact of how far through the maturity curve is AI and how far are people ready to accept a bot. And I think purposely we've kind of tested it. We've put it in parts of our site where people, it becomes more apparent, but people have to use it themselves. So we're not forcing it upon people. You know, I've seen quite a lot of channels out there recently, airlines in specifically, as they went through the crisis, where they've just put a bot in front of you and you can't, thou shall not pass until you've been through the bot. And I think it's, you know, we purposely haven't done that. We've left it almost optional for people to use the bot, but we've left it there as a big banner saying, we can help you, how can we help you kind of thing, rather than you log in and you can't do anything else apart from use a bot. You know, we still got a contact us number on there. We've still got, we've still got opportunities to do things in different ways through self-service. And leaving that option open is something that I've debated with in my own head and with the team quite a lot, is culturally, when do bots become mainstream and when can you almost put that front and center? Can you ever do that? And secondly, you know, how ready is the nation to interact with AI rather than a person? And I think, you know, we talked about Alexas and you know, they're certainly more mature than bots are at the minute. And that took, well, I don't know, it's taken quite a long time to get from the initial voice recognition to here. So I think we've just got to be conscious culturally of where we are on that journey and make sure we're not forcing it on people at the wrong time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, typically in any change program, you know, culture is one of the pillars that really needs to be in the right place in order for successful change to happen. And I guess, you know, whilst it's exciting and there, you know, clearly this benefit from the customer, there could be a perception internally of, you know, the bots are taking over, they're taking our jobs. You know, and that is just a natural human thing to do. You know, if in a situation where actually there's less people required to deal with those customer queries, how have you managed that kind of culturally within the Very Group?
Yeah, I think we've been, you know, really successful at that so far. And I think we've obviously, the Very Group's been on a big journey from, you know, 100-year-old mail order from people on the streets, you know, handing out catalogues to shops, to then closing the shops and becoming mail order only, to having contact centres full of people taking orders, to now not having that. We've been on a constant evolution. So thankfully, the organisation is one that has been changing for 90 years and continues to change. So there's a high tolerance of change within the organisation. We've leveraged our partnerships really well with outsource providers to make sure that effectively, as we ramp down our numbers, and we have, you know, as you talked at the start, we've taken 50% of contacts in over 2 years. We've taken the best part of 10 million contacts a year out over the last few years of leveraging our partnerships with outsourcers to give them enough notice to, you know, move people onto other campaigns or do things from an outsource perspective, while retaining our in-house teams for, you know, the more complex stuff, the more financial services related stuff. So we've been able to balance that really well. We've been able to, through the pandemic, you know, use that to our advantage, moving people to home working, creating new, you know, snazzy offices for people to come back in post pandemic, and really modernizing the infrastructure as we go through it. So actually, the reduction in contact has helped us, particularly through the pandemic and now coming out the other side, on where we focus our attention really. But it's been, you know, moving things around and moving, you know, people is always tough, but actually being able to do it in a systematic way and almost predict the reduction in volume has allowed us to work with people to protect people and support people through that journey.
And I see posts, you know, regularly on LinkedIn, you know, which equally, you know, grab my attention around, you know, that employee engagement work that you guys are doing. So just proving that you're reinvesting some of those savings back into the organization and into the people, you know, and in turn, obviously, you know, putting cost where it's needed, really, that's going to add and drive the most value for your customers. So, you know, kudos to you guys. I always love seeing when you've got new joiners as part of your LinkedIn updates. So clearly the benefits are sticking out around contact reduction, therefore less cost in the business, you know, great customer satisfaction. Are there any other key benefits, you know, around productivity or employee satisfaction or anything else that came out of this AI change project?
There's certainly, you know, a whole new set of skills for the organization that have been developed. You know, our knowledge managers, our chatbot engineers, are half of them are people who've come out of the operation and done that because of the way that we describe stuff. There's a new set of roles within customer care as well now. You know, knowledge management is key, you know, whether that's for our frontline agents or for the bot, and keeping those things consistent as well. Continuous improvement, change management, updating the language has all become a skill. So, you know, the roles in customer care are changing, you know, significantly. And that's one of the things we've been working with the teams on. Not only those people doing more technical roles now to support the AI or to support other things, but the specialisms within customer care are far bigger now. So, you know, we don't do that much general customer care anymore. It's you know, people in financial difficulties that need support. It's fraud management. It's specialisms where people can grow significant careers out of it, you know, whether that's, you know, skills in counseling, skills in negotiation, skills in fraud identification. I actually think the customer care arena has matured significantly. You know, the roles of yesterday, and, you know, I started my career in contact centers answering the phones, you know, of hundreds of people, you know, answering quite simple general queries. That doesn't exist anymore. You know, our average training length for any advisor is 13 weeks now. It's not, you know, it's what job do you train for 13 weeks in? Not many of them, to be fair. It's a very skilled role. You know, average call lengths are best part of 10 minutes, and therefore it's It certainly isn't, I need to pay my bill, can I pay my bill? You know, where's my order type stuff? Yeah, of course, we get some of that from people who need our support, but majoritively, the conversations we're having are really in-depth, quite knowledgeable, and need a lot of training. So, but what I try and encourage the teams is they're skills you can take on to many other careers, skills in negotiation, skills in fraud management, skills in counselling, that actually lots of our teams go on to do, you know, really wide and varied roles from that now. Equally, that more technical element of the role of knowledge management and skills, lots of our teams go on to be product owners, developers, change managers. So I think, you know, I would say there's a fantastic career, you know, being started in customer care for a lot of people now. There's lots of new skills, and hopefully you see that across the different, you know, clients that you work with. We're just embarking with the government on the Kickstart program at the moment as well. And, you know, I'm so excited to see a new generation of people and give people an opportunity to come into that environment as well, which, you know, will be immense and opens a great opportunity for them, but equally a great opportunity for us to employ new people as well.
I love that, Mark. And I guess, you know, I too started off in a contact centre. You know, and that the volume and the transactional and the repetition, you know, it was hard graft and frustrating. And actually, there's probably a perception that, you know, people are quite low skilled in that customer service arena as a result, really. So, you know, to see the future and opportunities for people in that customer arena, because, you know, every organization is talking about customers being at the heart of their business now. And rather than it be a buzzword and something they tick a box, I think, you know, more and more organizations realize, you know, if they don't intentionally go after putting their customer first and use their teams internally to create that focus, then they're going to fall behind. And that's without digitalization, you know, they really will fall behind. So that's great. So I guess from your perspective, looking into the future, we know what the Very Group are, you know, aspiring for in terms of how much technology will play a part in the operational and customer service channels. But where do you see the shift, just generally, really, you know, kind of sector agnostic, just how far of a swing do you think we will end up having with humans versus technology?
I think it will continue to evolve. You know, I do think I think what we're starting to do now is create good self-service. I don't know if that's been there before in a lot of organizations, particularly perhaps more older organizations and less startup organizations. You know, the rise of, you know, startups out there, more technological led organizations, has driven everybody in a similar direction. I think there's a tipping point. We talked about it before. I think, you know, there will all, and I also think that we're starting to sway back to a need for more human interaction as well. I think the pandemic's driven some of that, if I'm being brutally honest. I think, you know, we've all been stuck in our own houses with a small number of people for quite a long period of time. There's a level of human interaction that's definitely required at the minute. And I think we'll see that as, you know, post the announcement this week from the government, and as people start to return to offices, what that new norm looks like. And I think it's the same for the industry and for customer care in general, really. I think you'll see bots become more mainstream. I think you'll see them become better. And I think customers will demand that they're better or they won't use them. And it's that old tipping point of self-service, really. But I think for most stuff now, we're getting to a point where organizations can only take self-service so far before customers start to detract and need that human interaction. I think what happens with the high street over the next few years will be really important as well, because, you know, what you may see there is a sway back to the high street for certain things and a sway to digital for other things as well. I think you'll get a divide of people. I think you'll get an emergence of different demographics. And I think as kids start to grow up and emerge over the next few years, you'll certainly see them more comfortable with technology and the rise of AI as well. You know, my 8-year-old son uses his Amazon Alexa for pretty much everything. I'm pretty sure he uses it for his homework most nights as well, to be honest. So bots might be one of those things that lasts for a short period of time and they get overtaken by voice assistants. you know, fortunately, and I think most organizations will do this, we've built our bot in a way that it can be exposed to voice assistance. In fact, we've already used it and tested it with some customers in the lab already, that we can turn our bot into Alexa, Google Home facing pretty quickly, because you've got to be ready for the emergence of new technologies and how people use them as well. And I think the use of voice assistance will definitely play a part moving forward as well. The one area that I'm always a little on the fence with is video, and whether or not video customer service is ever going to take off as a mainstream channel. I think it's very costly. I mean, I remember trying it 6-7 years ago at Vodafone. It went down like a lead balloon, to be fair, because it cost about £1,000 per transaction internally, and customers were uncomfortable using it at that time anyway. We didn't help ourselves because we put a little TV in store for customer service and sent customers over to the TV to have their customer service transaction. So you can imagine why they were put off by that, to be honest. But, you know, that was all a learning for us on how people feel culturally about that. I also think there's probably a bit of Teams Zoom fatigue from a lot of people, and the last thing they want to do is have another Teams meeting for customer service. So I think for high net worth, high transactions, banking, mortgages, cars, there's definitely a place for video customer care. But I think for mainstream customer service, people will continue to seek other channels, really. So I think it's going to be interesting over the next 5 years to see how it kind of emerges, how we emerge out of this pandemic, what happens with the high streets, and, you know, whether people continue to be more comfortable using digital channels or we get a reaction either way.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I certainly saw through, you know, the pandemic, a rise in video and that opt-in to go in store, or just, you know, had it with one brand where I was shopping online, had the option to chat, and then the next thing I'm talking to a person that's actually sat in their house, and it was a pleasant surprise, actually. You know, especially because I was shopping for a gift, and then suddenly it felt like you had that personal experience as if you were in the brick and mortar store. So yeah, I agree. I think it will be interesting to see how it emerges, but I like the way that the Very Group have embraced the technology and how you've kind of brought it into the organization, as, you know, almost feels like a human itself, isn't it? In terms of it's part of the team, you know, and as you say, you know, you're training it like it was, you know, a human itself. So it kind of feels like it's there representing your customer and is integral to the culture of your organization. Do your customers ever feedback in terms of, do they tell you, you know, in terms of any verbatims, that we know we're talking to a bot, but we're cool with this? Do you get feedback?
We do, yeah. We get it through the ease of use survey that I've talked about. And we also get quite a bit through just general NPS and Trustpilot and other channels out there as well that we use. And I think we get predominantly a positive reaction of, you know, easy to navigate the bot, you know, found what I needed, or, you know, took me to the right place. Where that breakage happens from that channel to another, that's where you get a little bit of feedback that you need to improve, just making sure it's really slick handover from one channel to the next. And that's what we're trying to improve that at the moment, just to make sure that kind of gets better and better.
Okay. My last question then, Mark, for those listening today, what's the one piece of advice that you would give them ahead of looking to implement AI as a customer engagement channel?
I think we've covered it already. You've got to understand why customers contact you and the best channel to serve them in. And the bot needs to cater to that, not try and shoehorn that into the bot. I think we've done a lot of research on bot over the last 5 years. That there's a couple of just key things. One, don't make it feel too robotic. Don't try and lie to people that they're speaking to a human being, and make sure they know it's a bot. And secondly, you know, make sure there's no dead ends and you're not kind of keeping people in that bot when they want to be doing something else. Are the key bits of advice I would give. The second thing is, as you just touched on, don't think you've cracked it straight away. It's a continuous cycle of learning. It's taking something from a baby, a child to an adult, ours is probably an adolescent at the minute. It's quite a well-behaved one, I think, but it is probably an adolescent at the minute. It's a consistent journey. You can't put it in and forget about it. You have to constantly manage. There needs to be a team of people behind it, constantly updating, constantly looking at the stats, constantly looking at what's failing, what can be improved within there. So it needs a big level of commitment up front, and you need to be willing to listen to feedback and change it quite quickly, and you need to build the infrastructure to do that.
I've loved our chat this afternoon. Thank you for being so open about the journey that you've been on. And if I may, I'm going to come and have a little visit to your UX lab when it's back up and running. You've got customers in there, because I think there's so many people that can kind of learn from that concept. So thank you, Mark. Good luck at the footy.
No problem. Thanks, Emma.
Okay, good to talk to you. Take care.
Thanks, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Change Society podcast. And if you want to know more about how SNS can help you and your organization, there are three main ways. Number one, subscribe to this podcast and also check out some of our cutting edge knowledge and ideas on the insights page of our website. Number two, if you're a senior leader or change agent, join one of our change communities to network and share with like-minded individuals, both online and off. And finally, if you need to solve a problem across business change, agility, delivery, or transformation, and don't want to go down the traditional consulting route, shoot us an email to hello@sullivanstanley.com.